It's The Currents Music News, the weekly podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. Today is Thursday, May 23rd. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade. And later on, we'll be talking about the unlikely place that Aretha Franklin's daughter will and why it might be hard for Moby to get a date.
And why the Rolling Stones have given songwriting credit back to The Verve for one of your favorite songs from the 90s. But first, a look back on this week in music history. This week in 2000. It's the past, but it sounds like the future still. Anyway, this week in the year 2000, Chuck D testified before Congress in defense of Napster. The file-sharing service was under scrutiny for copyright violations, remember that? Facing lawsuits from Metallica, Dr. Dre. Well, the Public Enemy rapper said Napster was valuable for emerging artists. He said, "I can get my music out this way, but more importantly, guys who don't have a record deal can be heard worldwide."
And it kind of laid the groundwork for all the streaming services that we have now.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's talking about, like, SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm.
Well, referring to major labels, Chuck D added, "The Big Four control so much of the business that as an artist, I got a major beef. The system needs to be eradicated, and we must start from scratch." Less than a year later, Napster would shut down its file-sharing network by court order.
It's the rock apocalypse, as Finnish metal band Lordi sings in their song Hard Rock Hallelujah, which this week, back in 2006, won them the top spot in a surprising Eurovision competition. Finland had competed in Eurovision, which is sort of like the wilder version of American Idol, where countries all across Europe compete. They had been competing since 1961, and they had never won. In fact, during their 40 years competing, they came in dead last 8 times. So in comes Lordi to save the day. The band is this mix of AC/DC and Kiss, only they wear costumes of horrific, terrifying monsters. And they not only won the finals and the semifinals, but their final score was a record-breaking 292 points. All hail Lordi.
Hard rock, hallelujah. Hard rock, hallelujah.
In a little bit, we're going to talk about this year's winner of Eurovision, who's kind of the opposite of Lordi. But one more music history highlight. This week in 1966, the Castiles hit the studio to record their single That's What You Get with the B-side Baby I. At the time, they were a high school band in New Jersey, but their guitarist would go on to make a name for himself as a solo artist, Bruce Springsteen. In his memoir, Springsteen wrote, "We walked out of the studio that afternoon with a 2-track tape and some acetates. We already knew we'd hit a wall locally. There was just no place left to go with either our record or our quote-unquote career. We were not the big dogs in town. Since Frank Sinatra, no one of import had known the Garden State existed or had come far enough south down the parkway to realize there were people there, much less rock and roll being made." On Chapter and Verse, the compilation album accompanying his book, Springsteen included the Castiles' Baby I. Okay, about that music news we promised you in this podcast. For the past 2 decades, 100% of songwriting royalties for The Verve's hit Bittersweet Symphony have gone to Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
Which was always sort of a sadness to me because that song was so good and it was everywhere. And to have all the money go to, you know, a band that was established and already had a lot of money always felt like, oh, poor The Verve.
Well, now the Rolling Stones are actually giving writing credit back to The Verve's Richard Ashcroft. The Bittersweet Symphony story, it's one of the most infamous cautionary stories ever about what can happen when you sample other artists' music. So that string hook from The Verve's 1997 hit is a sample from an orchestral cover of the Rolling Stones song The Last Time. The Stones sued The Verve over that sample, and the result was that Jagger and Richards got 100% writing credit for the song. Now in what Richard Ashcroft calls, quote, a kind and magnanimous gesture from Mick and Keith, the Stones have returned all writing credit and future royalties to Ashcroft.
Do you think this is because when Mick Jagger went in for his heart surgery, they gave him a new heart that was bigger and more generous?
Oh, I hope that's it. It also apparently has something to do with Jody Klein, who's the son of Alan Klein, who's the notoriously aggressive Rolling Stones manager who launched that lawsuit. In addition to thanking Mick and Keith, Richard Ashcroft thanks Jody Klein for taking the call. About this year's Eurovision music competition, controversially held in Israel, ended with victory for Duncan Lawrence of the Netherlands. Now, Eurovision, like you were just saying, Jade, is known for these over-the-top, kitschy performances like Lordi. But Duncan Lawrence is bucking that trend with Arcade. It's a quiet song performed solo at the piano.
Wow, very moving.
Yeah, I guess only time will tell whether he'll reach the heights of past winners like Lordi, also ABBA, Celine Dion, Eurovision winners of the past. In general, organizers and hosts were pleased with how the event went off this year. It also included a guest appearance by Madonna, who resisted calls to boycott the event and appeared in her Madam X getup with that eye patch thing to promote her upcoming album. Here's Duncan Lawrence with Arcade.
I'm afraid of all I am. My mind feels like a foreign land. Silence ringing inside my head. Please carry me, carry me, carry me.
Well, Woodstock may have been 50 years ago, but the 60s can still get you 8 miles high.
Oh, God, what?
That is what an instrument repairman in the Bay Area recently discovered when fixing a vintage Buchla Model 100 modular synthesizer. So it had been stored in a Cal State dorm room since the 60s, and so this guy was repairing the synth, kind of restoring it, and after he brushed his hand against a crystalline residue, he was off on an unexpected 9-hour acid trip.
What? How?
This is on the TV news in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's got to be right. TV news would not lie to us.
Wow.
So yeah, reportedly that substance was later confirmed to be LSD, which can be absorbed through the skin and can remain potent for decades when stored in a cool, dry place.
So the moral of the story is, if you are going to the house of an old hippie for a garage sale, just don't touch anything.
Wear gloves, or just get ready to go along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Open your mind. Percussionist Preston Epps has died of natural causes at age 88. His greatest musical legacy is bringing bongos to a mainstream audience with his instrumental song Bongo Rock, which became a top 20 hit in 1959. He was discovered playing in a Hollywood coffee house by a DJ who told him that if he could get that incredible 15-minute bongo solo down to 2 minutes, he'd have a hit on his hands. Sure enough, that song and subsequent singles including Bongo Bongo Bongo, Bongo in the Congo, Bongo Rocket, and Bongo Boogie helped fuel a 60s bongo boom. But his musical contributions went beyond the bongos. He also played drums on the Penguins' iconic hit, Earth Angel, and later, as a nightclub manager, he discovered soul singer Lou Rawls. Here's Preston Epps with Bongo Rock.
Moby has an autobiography called Then It Fell Apart, which his website says is a journey into the dark heart of fame and the demons that lurk beneath the bling and bluster of the celebrity lifestyle. And I think bluster might be the key word in that description. Some teasers for the book have already appeared, and one of them that a lot of people are talking about is one where Moby's sharing a story of trying to romance a young Lana Del Rey back when she was known as Lizzie Grant. He took her out to dinner and he started bragging about being sort of a wealthy musician, having this big giant home, to which Del Rey called him the man. And at first he thought it was a compliment. She went on to say, no, 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 as in stick it to the man. And she said that he was a rich wasp from Connecticut Needless to say, there was no second date with Lana Del Rey. And another thing that Moby wrote about was about dating a young Natalie Portman, who has since denied his claim. In an interview with Harper's, Portman said, "I was surprised to hear that he characterized the very short time that I knew him as dating, because my recollection is a much older man being creepy with me when I had just graduated high school." The porcelain star took to Instagram to respond to Natalie Portman and said, "I completely respect Natalie's possible regret in dating me. To be fair, I would probably regret dating me too, but it doesn't alter the actual facts of our brief romantic history." And apparently Moby's not enjoying the comments or the memes about his response to Natalie Portman. And so he wrote another message to the trolls saying, "Dear trolls, isn't there a better way to be spending your time?"
When Aretha Franklin died last year, authorities believed she left no will. It turns out that might not be exactly true. In fact, she might have three or more wills, but none of them might be admissible in court. A representative of Franklin's estate has informed the probate court that the estate has discovered three handwritten documents, one in a spiral notebook under her sofa cushions.
I just like that because it feels very much like a murder mystery where somebody was in there and like, "I don't know where her wills are. I don't even think she has ones," as they coyly put it underneath the cushions in the couch.
Well, the cushions were picked up and they found that notebook, and the documents seemed to lay out some of Franklin's intentions regarding the distribution of her assets, naming her children and grandchildren as beneficiaries, and, little shade posthumously here from the Queen, she pointedly does not give anything to the father of one of her children, a man she says contributed almost nothing to her son's upbringing. The question is, can these handwritten, sometimes hard-to-read documents serve as the equivalent of a legal will? And experts are kind of divided on that. On the one hand, it does seem like if you have a handwritten document like this that does seem to represent the will of the deceased, it can be admitted in court, but also these documents are very ambiguous. There are a few of them, and ambiguity can be problematic, obviously, when it comes to interpreting the intentions of the deceased. Ken Abdo, an entertainment lawyer based in Minneapolis who we've talked to before for the podcast, says, "We should be looking under all the furniture." Right now, Franklin's four sons are divided regarding whether they want these documents to be accepted by the court. If Franklin is ruled to have died intestate, that is, without a will, her assets will be split evenly among those four sons.
Now it's time to check out some new music coming out this week. One of those being Welsh artist Kate Le Bon. And she's an artist who really loves to challenge herself. For her 2013 release, Mug Museum, she handcrafted 100 mugs. So, to prep for her new album, Reward, she moved to an isolated cabin and took a class learning to carve wooden furniture. That isolation and loneliness seem to seep into the lyrics as she sings in the light, where she is holding the door for my own tragedy, take blame for the hurt, but the hurt belongs to me.
You know, we get gold records sent to us sometimes at The Current. I feel like if I had 100 mugs associated with an album, wouldn't that be a cooler thing to send out than like just copies of the record?
Yes.
When your dad is Steve Earle and you're named after Townes Van Zandt, it's understandable it might take a while to make a name for yourself, especially when you're also a singer-songwriter who makes moody, confessional, and sometimes politically charged music. Justin Townes Earle has very much come into his own, though, and after a run of introspective music, he's decidedly looking outward with his new album, The Saint of Lost Causes. He visits many corners of America and finds characters searching for hope, whether in Flint City Shake It or Appalachian Nightmare. The title track lays a loping beat over haunting pedal steel, landing somewhere between Bruce Springsteen's Ghost of Tom Joad and Father John Misty's Bored in the USA. No ironic elegance here, though, just a hard look at a hurting country. Here's a solo acoustic rendition of that song, recorded live at the Current South by Southwest Day Party this year.
coming back dream. Not a nightmare, I'm too pretty for that. See, I'm the last thing you want to see come. I'm the reason they see.
Lou Barlow has been busy making music with his solo project, Folk Implosion, Dinosaur Jr., and now this week, the ninth album from Sebado, Act Surprised. It's been about 6 years since Barlow, along with Jason Lowenstein and Bob D'Amico, released music for Sebado. The songs are fast rockers with a soft underbelly, but the band still slows it down with songs like Celebrate the Void.
I get the feeling you don't feel. Must be a reason you're still here.
Sting is a restless guy. He's never stopped reinventing his own songs. And that is what his new album, aptly titled My Songs, is all about. It contains 15 new versions of songs originally released in the 20th century, from 1978's Roxanne to 1999's Brand New Day. These new versions are kind of Frankenstein creations, remixing elements of the original recordings with new studio recordings and live concert recordings. It could be a project to introduce Sting to a new audience, but that'll probably continue to fall to artists like Juice WRLD, who sampled Shape of My Heart on his track Lucid Dreams. My Songs really seems like a project for longtime Sting fans who've memorized every detail of the original tracks and are ready for something new, but not too new. Here's one of the wilder reinventions. Sting turns If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free, which is a jazzy hit from his solo debut Dream of the Blue Turtles, into a sort of disco jam, complete with chic-style guitar fills and big, bold synths. Get ready for a trip. Runaway Train is a beautiful song, but part of what made it such a sensation when Soul Asylum released it back in 1992 was that haunting video. Remember that, Jade?
Yeah, where it showed actual images and names of kids who were either runaways or were somehow missing.
Yeah, and the video actually helped reunite many of those runaways with their families, which is why the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has released a new version of the song and video called Runaway Train 25. Yet we are a couple years past the 25-year anniversary, but, you know, these things take time. The new version of the song, our viral clip for today, is a cover performance by Jamie N. Common, Skylar Gray, and Gallant. The video comes in both a standard version and an interactive version that you can see at runawaytrain25.com. In the interactive version, you see images and names of young people who went missing in your area. Soul Asylum's Dave Perner calls the project very cool. And that's today's Music News. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade.
Our producer today is Anna Wagle. There's an awesome new podcast from The Current called The Current Rewind.
Yeah, you can hear stories digging deep into the history of the Minnesota music scene.
We're actually going to share an episode of The Current Rewind as a special episode of this podcast so you can get a sense of what that podcast is all about. Listen for that this weekend. And then we'll be back next week with more music news.